I myself have to remember what we were speaking about in the last class. But from what I remember, we were speaking about a phenomena of, well, we were speaking about relationships, like real relationships and artificial relationships. Like artificial relationship is you're nice to someone because officially you're supposed to be, because they're in a position and you're supposed to be respectful or nice or whatever. It's just, so you might be nice, but you may hate them, right? But externally, you're very nice and you're very respectful because that's the culture or the etiquette. And you may know, you don't really respect them, but you do it externally. And you're aware of that, but sometimes you're not aware of it. And you actually think that you respect them and you really don't. Or you think you have affection and you really don't. Because you're supposed to. And if you don't, then you think, something's wrong with me. Because, so you, it's like you can, does that make sense? You can actually believe you have affection because you're supposed to. And everyone expects you to. And so you do it, but it's not, it may not be genuine. So one time Prabhupada said, if your relationship with your spiritual master is really tight, I don't know if you use the word tight, maybe thick and thin, he said, then you'll be able to follow all the principles, not because you have the strength, but because of the relationship. Like a husband and wife committed, you know. So there may be trouble, but they're committed. They may not even like one another anymore. You know, it's just, we're doing this for the kids, you know. You may, 20 years later, you realize, you know, you're in different universes now. But because of the commitment, the relationship, you do it. I mean, it's not a good example with the spiritual master, because it wouldn't get that way, generally. But generally, it gets the other way. But the idea is, you may not want to follow a principle. It may be difficult for you. It's like, you know, you could do it when you were younger, but now it's a struggle. He said, but because of that relationship, you do it. So I think there he's defining, like, what a real relationship is. It goes beyond how you're feeling today. You know, I like my wife when she was young, but now she doesn't look so good, so I'll find a new one. You know, that's becoming the, you know, it must be, you know, this is Bollywood, that must be. Well, Hollywood's ahead of you, but, you know, you'll catch up. You might surpass them, right? I predict you will surpass them someday. It'll take you a while, but you'll get there. So, I grew up in Los Angeles, so I grew up in Bollywood West, so I know what it's like there. So, and so, from my perspective, there are similarities in guru-disciple relationships, and then some things are not similar. Because it's, you know, it's a quite a unique relationship. And so, I was saying last week, I was very reluctant to ever officially become a spiritual master, because I had a big fear. And I think for me, this was just personal, I think for me, I had an aversion to people respecting me because they had to. It just didn't make me feel good, and I didn't like it, and I thought it was wrong. And I also thought it was wrong because it's like they say in the marriage world, when you first are with somebody, if you really like them, you don't work on the relationship because you like them. But 5 years later, if you don't work on the relationship, when all that initial attraction wears off, you have to work on the relationship. You know? So then if you develop a good relationship, it's because you worked on it and it's stable. So I didn't want people saying, oh, you're my guru, I love you, this and that, because that's what it says you're supposed to do in Shastra, and if you don't do it, you go to hell for a million lifetimes. So I better love you. You know, or like if you're a wife and, you know, you believe you go to hell if you leave your husband to get divorced, you know, and you have to love him, it's the highest thing. So you might love him because that's what you're supposed to do, but you actually don't. And it's of course, you know, some would say, well, it's good, at least you stay with him. Okay, that's true. But this is, for me, this was just personal. I felt like if somebody accepts me as their guru officially, that means they have to be respectful, they have to do all these things that, you know. And I said, no, I don't like that. But if somebody doesn't have to do it and they do it, and I go, then I know, okay, that's real. So I said, if I don't ever initiate and then anybody on their own does it, I'll feel, okay, this is, relationship is real. But as soon as I initiate, then I'm like, I don't know. And now that I've initiated, it's been confirmed in some situations that it's like that. So, and then I question, well, did we actually have a relationship, or did you have a relationship with a concept? And it wasn't me, it was a concept. You are the guru, embodied. But whether it's me or somebody else or somebody else, it wouldn't have made a difference. It's like, so that's I'm explaining it from my perspective, but it's a much bigger problem for the disciple than it is for me, because as one of my godbrothers said, a guru doesn't need disciples. A disciple needs a guru, you know. So someone was asking him for initiation, and that was the first thing he said. He said, you know, I don't need disciples for my spiritual life. You need a guru for your spiritual life. So it's not like a guru is anxious to get disciples because he's going to make more advancement. No, he's going to have less time. The more he has, the less time he has. So nowadays, different, at least for some gurus, they want to initiate for years and years and years and years and years and a few more, because they want to make sure that the person is actually has a relationship. There's some connection. It doesn't have to be personal, and we'll talk about that, because that's a whole, you know, you have personal connection, but you also have connection on a transcendental level. But they want to make sure the connection's there on a real level, not to a concept, which you could easily, you know, say, well, I'm not so into spiritual life now. So then that whole relationship goes, because it was a relationship with a concept. And we see that all the time, you know. And then all of a sudden, the guru doesn't hear from the disciple, doesn't know where the disciple went. It's like over, you know. So it's like, well, didn't we have a relationship? You know, imagine, you know, your husband, you know, you go to work and come back and there's a sign on the door, you know, I'm gone, you know. Something like that, you know. Well, at least you're lucky you got a sign. Most disciples, they don't say anything. They just kind of disappear. So then I was thinking, oh, what kind of relationship is that? Did they ever have one? And so then I was saying last week that anytime you have a big organization, and we have a big one, there are problems. It's just human nature, right? Because you've got millions of people and not everybody loves one another like they should in the ideal world. So, and our movement is very young, so it's not like we joined the Catholic Church that's been formulated and organized probably, you know, for 1,700 years. They probably had it really, you know, or at least 1,000 years. It's well structured, and they made their mistakes. They had 1,000 years to figure it out, and then another 1,000 years to put it together. Our movement, it just expanded rapidly, and there was no time to figure it out. So a lot of people got hurt in the process because it wasn't mature. So I was telling the devotees last week, I was saying, video started to break. As long as you can hear the audio, the video, if it breaks, it's fine. It's going through a dongle, which means it's like your phone. It has 3 bars, 4 bars, 5 bars. It's going to shift. Just let me know if you can't hear me. So maybe they didn't even hear that. I forgot what I was saying. I was saying that I said something What was the last thing I said? Oh yeah, the big organization, there's problems. So I was saying last week, I was saying, anyone who joined in my generation in the 70s that's still here, it's only because of their connection to Prabhupada. I mean, here, I mean, you know, number one, still doing devotional service within ISKCON or not. And what to speak of within ISKCON, that's only because, I would say, it's that relationship. Otherwise, I think everyone would have left. I'm fed up. You know, because we all have our ideals. And, you know, you have an organization with a million different ideas. And people who come with different motives they don't even know they have. And you read, this is how it is in the books, and you look in the organization, and you go, wait a minute. This doesn't look right. And I just want to do it in my house or find a group and we'll start our own temple. You know. And I'm sure many, if not all, have been tempted with those thoughts. So I was saying, well, anyone, that's my feeling, anyone that's still around after all that, and, you know, people may not have been personally hurt in any way, but other people were hurt, or they saw people who weren't treated fairly, or discrimination against women. It was like, you know, so many things. It's because that connection with Prabhupada was real. If it was just, oh, Jai Prabhupada, you know, you're the savior of the world, and you got it. So far, so good with this one, but we're just doing audio now because it wasn't fast enough for video. So I'll tell you a story. I lived in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles was the biggest temple in America, at least when I was there. And it was Prabhupada's headquarters before his preaching took off in India. World headquarters was Los Angeles. And when Prabhupada would come to Los Angeles, devotees would come from, you don't know where, because you didn't see these devotees all year, and they'd come to see Prabhupada. And then they'd go, Prabhupada! You know, all this kind of stuff, you know? Then Prabhupada would leave, and then they'd stick around for a day or two, and then you wouldn't see them until Prabhupada came back. So you had, you know, you had people with that kind of relationship. It was like it only functioned in his presence, and in his presence, very devoted. You know, a devotee was recently telling me that when their spiritual master comes to their city, he was a temple president, and he said, all these people come to the temple and say, can I do service? And they never do anything the whole year, but they want to do service, and I think they also want their spiritual master to know they're doing service. They said, so this is like a real phenomena. You know, it's obviously good they want to do service, but it has to go deeper than that. And so we've seen this in Prabhupada's time, and we've seen it, you know, somebody who's, you know, very enthusiastic when the guru's there, and when the guru goes, pew, you know. So now, Prabhupada said, the instructions are more important than the physical presence. And that was really hard for us, because physical presence, you're happy, you're inspired, and in absence, you're miserable. And he would say, absence is better because you're actually closer in absence because you think of one another more in absence. And in absence, you're forced to take shelter of the instruction. So I have a good story today. I just heard this story today because one of my godbrothers was going to Calcutta. I found out he was actually taking prasad at my house yesterday, and then he said he's going to Calcutta tomorrow. And I said, oh, so am I. What time? And it was the perfect time. So we went together, and we're talking about this a little bit. And he said he joined in 1976, and he never saw Prabhupada. And he said when Prabhupada left, he didn't feel anything because he didn't really, you know, he never met him. He didn't really have a relationship, and he hadn't been in the movement that much. And he just did service, and he, you know, like people who were up here, they had a connection with Prabhupada, they had access. And the fact that he never saw Prabhupada, like he never made that connection, you know. So I said, that's really interesting. I said, what about now? He said, now it's very deep. So I thought, what a great example. So now, 35 years later, 37, whatever it is, of following Prabhupada's instructions. It's deeper. And I said, what do you think made it deeper? He said, chanting Hare Krishna made it deeper. It became purified and then connected to Prabhupada through the process. I mean, you know, that's his individual subjective experience. But by advancing, it also became... Because if you're more advanced, you become closer to your spiritual master, because it's a spiritual process. Like in Scripture, there's a lot of verses in Scripture where it says, you know, my spiritual master, he's the one who saved me. I was floundering in the material world in ignorance, trying to be happy, you know, like Arjuna, going crazy, having a breakdown, you know, trying to figure it out. And then my guru came and sorted everything out, and now I'm happy and everything's good. So there's always this indebtedness kind of thing. And it grows as you make advancement because the spiritual master is the one who, in this case Prabhupada, is the one who gave us everything. So naturally, as you get what he gave, the connection is deeper. Right? So as you advance, you're taking more advantage of what he's giving, so the connection's deeper. So in that case, the better you chant, that was his gift, the holy name. He brought it, he delivered it, and so the better you're chanting, thank you, Prabhupada, for what you gave me, because I'm relishing it more and more, and I'm realizing how great this gift is, so our connection is even stronger. Something like that. So I thought that was a good example, because this idea of connecting with the spiritual master without a personal relationship, you know, it's kind of the opposite of what I just said. But it exists on a different dimension. And it's as real as the personal. Because connecting with the spiritual master through separation is through instruction. And that's also because spiritual master, his service is to give instruction. He helps his disciple through instruction. So if the disciple is following the instruction, that means that's the connection. Right? Now Prabhupada said, you should serve, if your spiritual master is present, you serve him. But if he's not, you follow the instruction, and that's more important. It's not like, well, Guru Maharaj, we'll see you later, but I'm hungry. I just serve your instructions, and you know, you told me to go out and distribute books, so you know, I hope somebody cooks for you. Haribol. No, it's not like that. He said, you know, in the presence you serve. But serving the instruction in separation, he said, it's the real relationship. So we're talking about real relationships, that's even more real, you know. Or equally real in a different way. But point is, shouldn't think that it's not real because you're distant. You know, you connect through... Well, I was thinking on the way over here, I was thinking, just like you may read a book by an author who lived a few hundred years ago, and you relate to it. Or maybe you've read Rumi, and you feel like this connection with Rumi, you know, whatever he says, I resonate with it, you know? And you feel like he's changed my life, these things he said, you know? And I never met him, I don't even... But you may feel deeply connected on some level. This person is my teacher. How's he your teacher? You never even talked to him. No. I was going this way and I read what he said and now I'm going this way. So you're reading his book and you're connecting. So Prabhupada said when Prabhupada translated the Nectar of Devotion and it first came to us, he said that by reading this book you're associating with Rupa Goswami because it's his teachings and it's his words. So you're actually with him. So what Prabhupada meant is like when you're with a spiritual master, what does association mean? It means learning from, like what they have to give you. That's association. And this example is always given, you know, mosquitoes sitting on the lap of the guru, but what's he doing? He's just biting, you know. So he's right next to the guru and he's biting. So that's not association. So you're with your guru when you follow the instructions. So Prabhupada said, spiritual master is always with the disciple. The disciple is always with the guru through instructions, through following their instructions. That's their connection. Now, another thing, along that lines of the example, if anybody's still 50 years later, 40 years later, still serving their spiritual master, it has to be something deeper than just, I like your smile and I like your kirtan. And you're a nice person. So, we have today Prabhupada's disciples who 37 years are serving. And most of them, probably all of them, will say, I feel closer now than when Prabhupada was here. In that transcendental way. That I feel close to Prabhupada when he was here, but in a sense I was further away because I wasn't advanced. And I wasn't able to follow his instructions as well. And I've come to understand his presence not as a physical being, but as a transcendental relationship, which is accessible through following his instructions anytime. Here's the instruction I follow, and I'm connected. And we had devotees who sometimes had opportunities to be with Prabhupada who didn't take them. I said, no, I just want to do service. I feel closer to him through service. And they felt like, well, I'll just sit in the room and like I'm enjoying my guru. I like having his darshan. I like looking at him. So I'm just enjoying his darshan. I feel, let me go out and serve. I feel closer. Something like that. So now I can speak. I couldn't speak this way before, but now I can speak on the other side as one receiving it. I could never do that before. And so, and Prabhupada says, I'll confirm my experience with Prabhupada says, he said, when a student is eager to follow the teacher becomes much more eager to give instruction to the student. So this guru-disciple relationship is like Krishna and Arjuna. So Krishna, Arjuna says, I don't know what to do. I tried everything. Didn't work. Beating my head against the rocks, you know. I give up. And the funny thing about it is he's telling Krishna like 2 minutes earlier why he shouldn't do what Krishna's telling him to do. And then the more he talks, the more he realizes is I don't have an answer. And the more I'm talking, the more confused and depressed I'm getting. That's actually what's happening. You ever been in that situation? You're like, you say, we should just do this, and the more you talk, the more you realize this isn't the answer. And you just get more confused. So he like hit a wall. He just said, on his own, you know, Krishna said, you know, you're speaking like a fool because you're just miserable. So what's the use of your philosophy? You know, it's like, your philosophy, if I follow your philosophy, I'll be miserable like you. So Krishna said that, but he kept talking, and then he just talked himself out of it, and he realized what Krishna just said. Yeah, I don't really have a philosophy, and I'm going nowhere. So then at that point he said, okay, Krishna, I'll just do what you say now. Just tell me what to do. So that exemplifies guru and disciple. When somebody comes to the point, I want to perfect my life, I want spiritual life, and I know I don't have all the answers, I have to get it from somebody. Okay, so I'll get it from you, and I'm willing to follow. So there it is, right in the Bhagavad Gita. It's quite simple. But the interesting thing about it is later in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says, approach a spiritual master, he says, you don't only ask questions and listen, you have to serve, because if you don't serve, you won't get it. It's like, you know, you go to college, you don't have to serve your teacher. I mean, you could. You don't have to go to their house and wash their clothes. You just get the information, you go home, pass your degree, and then, you know, you may forget them. But this relationship is different. So then, you have to serve. You inquire, you serve, and then you'll establish a relationship with your teacher. It's not academic, you know. Well, I got what I needed, and now I'm gone. See you later. It's a relationship. Prabhupada said it's an eternal relationship, or at least within this life, and some other guru who will represent your guru in another life, but it's the same principle. So, okay, now I'm confused, and I need to know, and then the guru says, okay, this is what you should do, and then the disciple does it, and the guru is very happy. Oh, you did what I said. That's very nice. You're happy because you did what he said, and he's happy because you did what he said, and that forms a relationship. That's how it works. And then it's not that, you see, the whole idea of service is really important, because when these devotees were coming, you know, for the 3 days when Prabhupada was in L.A. and jumping up and down, they were just enjoying being with Prabhupada. But the idea of service, after Prabhupada left, they left. There was no service. So it wasn't a real connection. It was like, you know, so there's this idea of enjoying the guru. You know, he chants nice, he speaks nice, I like it, I feel good. Well, what about everything he told you to do? And what about the mission and the service? And so that's a very important part of it. So there's Kirtan, Jai Prabhupada, jumping up and down, blissful, and then, you know, 3 days later, not following the instruction, not doing any service, or, you know. And the idea of when the guru comes, you do service, it's good. But in ISKCON, we're all serving Prabhupada, so when the guru goes, it doesn't mean now your service to Prabhupada stops. That's, you know, it's we're always serving. That's our nature, right? Serve, serve, serve. So that's how you make the connection, through service. And I've seen this. I have a practical example. Because a lot of people who I was counseling don't live near temples. So they don't, they just, you know, have their life, and usually they just watch television in the evening because they have nothing to do. So I said, well, could you do this for me and that for me? And they said, okay, I'd love to. And they started doing service. And I noticed the change in their spiritual life. I mean, they would tell me, well, you know, I really lost my desire to do this and that, and I really like doing service, and my rounds are getting better. And all this was coming from service. So I really saw, from my perspective, how somebody doing service was really progressing. So it's a very important aspect for your personal progress, and also for being able to hear. It actually helps. So that's the way the relationship typically is established between guru and disciple. And this can happen to any person. It doesn't have to be official guru. And so the point I was making earlier about natural is that this is also natural. It's not like, Avan, there's your guru right there, that one, because that's the one closest to your house. Okay, you got it? And Avan's like, no, it doesn't make sense to me. Or she's trying to make sense out of it, and she writes back and says, this doesn't feel right. Or she suppresses how she feels and says she's trying to do it, but it's not working. You know, something like that. So that's been a mistake that's been made in the past, where you feel like, well, this is the guru everybody has, so I guess it's my guru also. Whether, and I'm supposed to, if I don't feel something, it must be wrong, because everybody feels something. So I'm supposed to feel it, but I'm not feeling it. And so we went through eras like that, and it probably in some places it's still going, and actually it is, because I run into it. People who want to change decisions about gurus they've chosen, in some places the people don't understand that, and they give them a hard time. They say, something's wrong with you. You've already accepted to take initiation from this guru, and you've changed your mind, so there's something wrong. But there's not anything wrong. It's just relationships are natural, so you can't legislate the relationship. They became inspired or connected, or they have a very close relationship with someone, and they feel inclined to take initiation. And it's totally natural, and it happens all the time. And it happens so much, and it's such an important thing, that the GBC had to make a resolution that nobody should ever interfere with a disciple's choice of guru. It's between them and their guru. Nobody can't. The guru can't say, no, you've chosen me. The other guru that they're asking can't say, no, I can't do this because you have a guru. I mean, they work it out. You know, you get permission. The temple president can't say, no, you've already chosen this guru, you can't do this. No, it's natural. Nobody can do that. It's not right. Because the guru-disciple relationship is formulated primarily on trust, because trust is so important. Because if you don't trust, you can't follow. You know, well, should I follow? They said something. Oh, I don't know. Why should I follow it? You know. So in spiritual life, trust is very important. Trust in Prabhupada, trust in the Gita, trust everywhere. So when you find someone and you trust them to such a degree that you feel like, I want to serve, I can really, I'm so inspired under their direction, and their guidance is so powerful for me. I feel so connected. If anybody gets in the way, that's going to damage your spiritual, unless the person is not qualified to do it and somebody just wants to save you. But that's not so common within ISKCON. Maybe out in the outside world it might be. But within ISKCON, anyone who's doing this, is if they're weird or crazy, they'll be managerially not allowed to do it. So if the relationship is there, It's there because it's there. It's not supposed to be there because you're told it's, this is, you know, it's like, this is the guy you're marrying. And you're like an artist, designer, and he's like a geek, computer geek, who sits in front of computers for like 12 hours a day, and he's in bliss. You know, and you can't even count to 10, and computer programming, it's all about numbers, and you guys get together, and you say something to him, and he goes, yeah. And you say something else, and he goes, huh? And it's like obvious, like left brain, right brain, you know? You've got two poles, you know, it's not going to work. So, you know, and your parents are saying, no, it's the right family, right? And you're saying, it's not going to work. He's, I'm a free spirit. I'm creative. I'm an artist. And he's like, he can't even clap on time. All he can do is, you know, he reads science magazines, you know. It doesn't work. So it's not that much different, even though this sounds funny. It's really not that much different in any relationship, right? You know people and it's just like, you know, you don't, there's nothing in common. The relationship doesn't develop because there's nothing to talk about, right? You're funny, they're serious, you get around them, you don't feel good, right? Because every time you say something funny, they give you a weird look. Like, you're not supposed to do that, right? So this is just the way the world works. Hope this is making sense out there. But obviously there are differences between guru and disciple relationships, but on this level, there's not so many differences. Sometimes it just develops. It could be weird or artificial because the disciple doesn't really know what to look for and they think they have a relationship and they don't. But I'm talking about when it actually is, when there's trust. I really trust this person. Nobody can tell you to trust anybody. Nobody can force you to trust anybody. And if you do trust anybody, nobody can say don't trust them unless they can prove, you know, he's got a record. He's, you know, he's raped 26 women last month. Okay, all right. I guess I can't trust him, you know. I guess he's playing like a guru because I'm going to be number 28. All right, I get the picture. But that's so rare, and it just doesn't happen in ISKCON. So if you trust somebody and anyone interrupts with that trust, they're killing you. And I've seen this. I'm on the receiving end, and I've seen this, that the trust is so important. And if somebody finds something they dislike in a guru who's not their guru, and they tell a disciple that, you know, your guru did this and I don't think this is good and that, you can actually sever the relationship if the disciple actually believes it. And a relationship which was good, which was nourishing this disciple, is broken because the trust is broken. And then in some cases, that trust equates to trust in Krishna and in ISKCON and the whole Gaudiya process. And they just, it all goes because of one thing. So trust is very important, and we shouldn't allow anybody to force us to trust, and we shouldn't allow anybody to break the trust, to get in the way, you know, because that's where spiritual life comes. And then when the trust is there, if it's developed naturally, then when you hear, you can act on it because you believe it. Because, you know, you can hear so many things, not do anything, right? Where if the trust is there, it affects you differently. It's like, for example, I could give a lecture, like a really, really good lecture, really, really well prepared, and you can listen to this, and you could say, Mahatma, that lecture, you know, I listened to TED Talks, and that lecture, that was as good as any TED Talk I've had, right? And so now I'll say thank you for that. You know, I've studied how to do it. I really try. I appreciate that. You know, it makes me feel good. Now, Mahatma is going to be a TED. Who's going to show up? They don't know about me, right? So you have to make me bigger than life. You know, world teacher, you know, author, you know, never comes to Bombay. He's here for, you know, 2 hours on his way to a, you know, then all of a sudden there's like 1,000 people there, right? And everything I say, they're like, wow, that's amazing, isn't it? That was so-and-so, right? If I could write a book and sell 1 million copies, now everything I say, the people will be like, That's fantastic, right? It's human psychology, isn't it? Because why? There's trust. It's a brand, right? You've branded something. You trust a product. You've used it. I only drive these cars. I trust Japanese cars, not American cars. No Fords, only Toyotas. I trust them, right? Whether it's logical or not, it works. So if you develop trust, that's one of the most valuable things you can have in a teacher, is to trust them. And if you don't have trust, you have to find somebody you can trust. Otherwise, you can't listen. And if you don't have trust, you can't follow. And you won't want to serve. But why do you want to serve somebody if you don't trust them, right? So from the position of the guru has to be trustworthy. And of course, the disciple should be trustworthy. And the guru and disciple relationship is it's similar in many ways, because the guru is serving the disciple also. And the guru trusts the disciple. And if I tell you this, you'll do it, that I depend on you to do this. So their positions in one sense are very similar. And there's like a contract. Okay, I'll agree to take care of you, and you agree to help me. And it was, we've talked about in other classes, actually the guru really sees the disciple as one that he's serving. Just like the disciple sees that I'm serving the guru, but the guru sees I'm serving the disciple. So he doesn't really feel himself up here. He actually feels himself just as a servant. And some of my god brothers say, they said something really interesting, and I think you'll like this. They said, because all of us are disciples of Prabhupada, I'm initiated, but you're also disciples of Prabhupada because you read his books, you follow him, you follow those who represent him, so you're also a disciple. I'm a Diksha disciple, you're a Siksha disciple. And there's not a big difference. So, because you're a Siksha disciple, in all of you, and I'm a Diksha disciple, so this devotee who's a guru, he said, I treat my disciples like god brothers and god sisters, because that's your guru also. Prabhupada's your guru also. You worship him, I worship him. You read his books, I read his books. You listen to people who represent him, I listen to people. So I thought that was nice. Right? So you know, you're like, you're a disciple, but you're also like a god sister, because that's our guru also, same guru. So the guru's position is not, in many ways, is not a whole lot different than the disciple's position, because he's also serving. And he also needs trust. So trust is not artificial, it's natural. Yes, you know. And when it's there, it's there. And you can't tell people to have it. That's what makes a relationship real. And so many people have been initiated when that wasn't there. It was just, well, he's the one to get initiated because he's the one. Because that's where everybody gets initiated from, in this temple or this part of the world. And not that they regret it because of the lack of any lack on the part of the guru, but they'll regret it that perhaps later on the line that they actually really didn't choose it. It was, you know, so the guru is bona fide, so you're okay. But you never, it's like, you know, I never chose this guy, you know. And if I would have chosen, I wouldn't have chosen a scientist. But, you know, he's a good guy, you know, but it's, I'm not fulfilled in some sense, you know. Now, that's fine if you're a disciple, because you can have so many Siksha gurus. Doesn't work if you're married. You can't have three more husbands, you know. So it's not that bad, but I'm just reflecting that this happens, and there are people who, you know, you can see that they're happy with their guru, but they're not happy that they were forced to choose, because they realize probably they wouldn't have chosen. Although he's fully qualified, right? So, you know, this husband's good, he's a nice guy, but if you let me choose, I won't choose him. But, you know, that's 10 years later, I was just doing what my mother said, and now I realize I probably would have chosen another guy. But still, it's okay, we're married, we have kids, it's going on. So I've seen a lot of that. It's just, they realize what it means to be a disciple and choose a guru, like, way later, and they were just, everybody in the temple saying, when are you getting initiated? It's like, you know, you've been around for 5 years, when are you getting initiated? Oh, I'm supposed to get initiated, right? Yeah, it says right there in the Nectar of Devotion, the most important thing is to get initiated. So when are you going to get initiated? And they're thinking, oh, I guess I should get initiated. Oh, so who are you getting initiated by? Oh, I mean, I have to find somebody. Yeah, you need to find. Ooh, okay, well, I guess so, you know, it's like in 10 seconds you make the decision. Yeah, well, why don't you, or they're like, well, you know, everybody else takes him and he's great. So that was ISKCON in the past, and that is ISKCON in some places presently, but it's not what it's supposed to be. It has to be you. You know, fully you, and that. So if you allow it to go natural, so maybe 10 years later, you say, no, well, I don't, you know, why are you pushing me to get initiated? I don't feel like getting initiated. You know, I have Prabhupada and I'm good. Fine, perfect. You know, that's perfect. You don't. It has to be organic and natural. You know, it's like some women, they're like 30 years old, 35. Say, why don't you get married? I don't feel like it. Their parents are, you know, tearing their hair out, right? But, you know, how can I do it if I don't want to? It's going to be a big mess. You know? So you have to feel it. No, why don't you want to do it? There may be so many factors, and you figure that out. But why do you want to get initiated? I'm not qualified. I don't have trust. I'm fine now. You know, whatever it is. But it can't be forced. And that's for you to decide. You know? So this is ISKCON history, forcing people. And it still goes on. When are you getting initiated? People are getting initiated who have trouble following the principles just because they've been around a long time and they're feeling like, well, I should do it. And maybe by doing it, I'll follow the principles. And then they get initiated and then they don't follow the principles and now they feel really guilty because before they didn't make a vow, so they were fine. Well, they felt bad, but they didn't make the vow. But now they made the vow, so now they feel really bad. And they're actually... And then they distance themselves from their guru. Whereas before they were initiated, they were close. Now they made a vow, so they feel guilty. So then they... You could relate to that, right? So also connecting with the guru in the sense of initiation or getting very close, there's another mistake that I see happening. And I'll get to your question in a minute. What I see happening is this phenomenon I was saying before, where you're very close and all of a sudden you disciples, what's happening? They don't write you. You write them a letter, say, stay in touch. They never write. Probably their spiritual life is not doing well. So they feel like, you know, they feel distanced from their guru because, as we're saying, the relationship is based on following the instruction. I'm not following the instruction, so I don't feel connection. I don't feel the relationship. So... I don't ever know if I want to get initiated or, you know, I feel embarrassed. Whatever the feeling is, they disconnect. That's the time they should connect. Not, so you don't have to think of guru in terms of initiation. You think of guru as a teacher. So now you're out here, the teacher will come and get you and bring you in here. But you're running away. So that's a mistake. So part of them are running away because they think, well, I can't be a good disciple. Well, that's fine. You can't be a good disciple. When you can be a good disciple, you get initiated. But until you can't, but your guru will help you become a good disciple. So you're out here, come a little closer to him, and he'll come closer and move you. So that's another mistake. It's just this embarrassment and guilt that I can or I don't want to follow. Well, I don't really want to chant 60 rounds. Okay, chant 8, but don't disconnect from me just because you're chanting 8 rounds. That's not smart. We were like working together, and I was helping you, and then. You stop chanting 16 rounds and now you don't talk. That's not smart. You know, so that's common also. And I think that's a misconception. You know, it's like all or nothing. And if you're nothing, you don't hang around the guru until you're something. Then when you're something, you can... No, but the guru can help you become something. Or he'll help you become whatever you want. And it doesn't have to be the highest standard. It's just he'll help you be better than where you were. And so that's what I call artificial relationship. You know, if the relationship is real, then you come and say, okay, this is what's happening. I haven't chanted my rounds in 3 months. You know, they should have told you that 3 months ago. They say, why didn't you tell me 3 months ago? Because the relationship was not good. But if the relationship is good, honest, straight, then they can tell you that. All right, so what do you want to do? Do you want to chant? No, I don't, because I've got this than that. I got to finish school. I can't concentrate. Okay, so what do you want to do? Could you do four rounds? Yeah, I could do four. Okay, so do four until you get out of college. Everything's fine. And don't break the relationship. You know, that's unnatural. In my mind, that's unnatural. Just like, well, you know, we had this really good relationship, and that's it. It's over. Why? Because I can't chant 16 rounds. I think that's wrong. Don't you? Jai Anuradha. Anuradha is in Mayapur. Yeah, so now there's a question here. I think I said enough. I think that's clear. I think, yeah. Just the word natural. I think if we work on natural and social pressure and all that, don't respond to it, but just, you know, what's real. Because for what's real for some, I mean, look at the world. If we spread Krishna consciousness in the world, do we expect everyone to take initiation? That would be crazy. You know, you have Prabhupada, you have his books, you have his connection. Average person, how many people are really ready to make that commitment? It takes time. And it's a change in lifestyle. That's 16 rounds every day. You can't do it. That's 2 hours every day. You can't mess it up. And so many other obligations. So when you feel ready, you want to do that. You're like, I want to do this. You sure you want to do this? Yes. Can you do this? I want to do this. I want that connection. I want that relationship. I'm serious. Then you do it, and it's fine. But if it's anything before that, then you have the siksha, right? If you have it, right? Then that's wonderful. Now here's another weird thing. Do you want personal siksha, or do you want siksha from a distance? You know, then you have to understand that. Now, here's where I find it weird personally, and I may be wrong, but you have two schools of ISKCON. You have the small village guru and you have the big guru. Because there's some gurus, they won't take a lot of disciples. And they say, why? He says, because I can't deal with them. They believe or want to deal with all their disciples personally. And the other gurus have lots of disciples. Obviously, once you get over 100, 200, 300, you can't. You know, some have thousands. You can't deal with them personally very much. You just don't physically can't do it. So then you have to do it through your disciples or others. And there are many advantages and disadvantages in my mind to both systems. And it will depend on an individual of what they think is best for them. Because the obvious disadvantage is that you're not going to get personal guidance. Whereas you could, if your guru has less disciples, you'll get it. One of my godbrothers, he won't take more than 100. I think he already has 100. It's like 100 and it's finished. I said, why? Because that's all I can deal with. So he wants to be involved. Others don't even have 100 and they've been gurus for 20 years. They just pick. I said, unless I can take you back to Godhead, unless I'm sure I can take you back to Godhead, then I don't want, and I have to be involved with you, so I'm going to make sure. So there's that kind of guru, and then there's a kind of guru who's got a structure in which he's got many temples and projects, and they're all making devotees. So naturally, you're getting hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people. Whereas these little gurus, they don't have projects, so it's just their personal their only people would take are the ones that contact them directly. Whereas the bigger gurus, people may not contact them, they just come within the organization. So the advantage of doing that is now you have thousands of God brothers and God sisters, and you have a structured organization, and you have counselors. With your little guru, it's just a little family. So people have to know that, and they don't really, I don't think they think like that. I'm just looking at it from the outside, the good things and the ups and downs, because I counsel a lot of people. And a lot of people I counsel are ones who have are disciples of gurus who have a lot of disciples who can't do it. It's just they're too busy. They can't physically do it. So it's another you don't, it's another paradigm, which I'm not saying is bad. It may be the best of both worlds, where I have my guru and this big family, and my guru is an incredible devotee and I'm so inspired, and then I have other six-year gurus that are really qualified. Or another person will say, well, if this is the person I'm always getting instruction from, why would I want that other person? I'm inspired by them, but this is really my guru, and that's just, he's more distant. So these are considerations that people don't always make, because there's a social environment. Well, everybody's taking from this guru, so it's working, you know. These are kind of things that people come up later, after 10 or 20 years, you know, they start thinking about it. And ISKCON is, it's growing, so people are learning, you know. So I'm just, these are just observations and things people tell me and things I see based on the needs of people. And I don't think there's a right way or wrong way. I think, and even if you get yourself into a situation where you later you reflect on it doesn't work, you can always opt for either side. You know, I got initiation from a guru with a small group of disciples, and I go, you know, everywhere I go, there's none of his disciples. Whereas this guru, everywhere I go, there's his disciples. So I'm going to make him my six-year guru, because then I become part of a bigger family. Or you reverse it, you know. Everywhere there's disciples, but I don't have anything personal, and I want to connect with this guru to get that person. So you can always change it. So I'm not saying one is good or bad, or you can't do both. Just saying people need to think about it a little more, because it's a relationship, and you don't want to feel like, well, my guru doesn't care about me, he's got so many disciples, he doesn't even know my name, you know. For some people, they're just like, yeah, of course he doesn't know my name, he's got 10,000 disciples, how could he? And someone else, he doesn't know my name, and, you know, they just, that devastates them. You have to consider all these things, you know. I mean, how could there be a connection? He doesn't even know who I am. He doesn't even know what I'm doing. So Prabhupada had so many disciples, and our connection wasn't that he knew our name. Everything was fine. So, but you have an option now, that you can have a guru who knows your name and can spend time with you. With Prabhupada, he was, you know, if you weren't a big devotee, you really didn't spend much time with him. But it didn't matter. It was like you were connected on the transcendental level. So these are all kinds of things to consider. And they're all good. If it works for you, it's good. I mean, I've had people, you know, I didn't want to initiate, because I just felt like they didn't understand guru and disciple well enough, and Christian consciousness. Said, why don't you take from this one? He's got like 7,000 disciples. I think you need to be around. You need to understand what guru and disciple is, and I can't show you because I don't have enough people around me to even show you. You'll understand it. You'll see how to treat a guru. Because this one woman, she didn't know how to treat a guru, and I just thought, just get a guru. She wanted me. I was just starting to initiate. I said, get a guru who has a lot of disciples. You need to learn. You need to be in that environment. So in that case, I thought, that's much better for her. So I'm not saying one is better or worse. For some people, something is better than worse. And she said, no, I don't want that, because I want to be able to personally relate with my guru. So I, you know, I didn't say anything, but I think she would have done better. I think what she wanted from a guru was a surrogate husband, which is why she wanted the personal relationship, and she didn't realize that. And that's why I said, the better you have a distant relationship, that you could never make him like another husband to you, or lover, or whatever it is you want, because it wasn't healthy. So, anyway, she wasn't happy with me. And because she didn't know what guru was, as easily as she accepted it, as easily she gave it up. It was all within a few weeks. What this brought up was also, she came in with expectations that the guru is going to be this person. She was writing like 3 letters a week, long ones, and she was sending me things that she was doing. You know, I wrote this, please read this. You know, it was like, we're talking like, you know, 3 hours a week. Three, 4 hours a week, you know. How many hours are there in a week that you can work? So, you know, 3-4, so that limits me to 13 disciples for the rest of the month. They're going to take 3 hours a day, you know, or, you know, 40. No. No, I could do 13 times. I could do 200. And then that would be... No. 8 hours a day. No, that's only... Yeah. 2.5 disciples a day. So I could only have 15 disciples or something. You know, it was unrealistic. So... And she didn't get that from me. And, you know, I said, I can't do this. And I wrote her once a very sparse letter. And she said, okay. She got really upset. So she didn't understand what a guru-disciple relationship was. She had some fantasized idea. And then she gave it up as easily as she took it. And the whole time she talked to me, when she met me, she was talking about, when am I going to get initiated? That was like so, you know, and I say, initiation is not important, it's the relationship. No, but when? Can I get initiated and when? So, you don't think like that. You think about, how can I serve this person? How can I connect? How can I learn from them? Not, when can you give me initiation? That will come naturally. When the time is right, you get it. But approaching with that idea, I really want to be, I really need that. A lot of times people like that, when they get initiated, then they go, because they got where they wanted, then they start to disconnect. Now I'm initiated, I'm good. It says right here, Nectar Devotion, we get, you know, you have to be initiated to be connected. So now I'm initiated, I'm good. And then they phase out. And then Prabhupada said something interesting. That happened. He did initiation, the next day the devotee left, and they told Prabhupada, and he said, he was never my disciple. So even though Prabhupada initiated him, he said, he was never my disciple. Because his whole motive was to get initiated and go. Now I'm connected. It's like, you're initiated, so you'll go back to Godhead. Okay, I'm going back to Godhead and I'm finished. Don't have to do anything. You understand? Yes.
What is that to have been during initiation? Not only the external, but on a transcendental platform.
What's happening transcendentally is that you're being officially accepted. It's like a marriage, it's now formalized. The relationship is formalized, then you're joining a disciplic succession. Gaudiya Vaishnav disciplic succession of spiritual masters coming down from Krishna, and you become part of that family. And it's like you're officially, it's like Prabhupada said, you're in university, but you didn't register, so you don't get grades and you don't get a diploma. Once you register, then it's official. So you learn everything. You can chant Hare Krishna, you can connect with Prabhupada as deeply as you want. At some point in spiritual life, we make that official connection. I'm not saying not to make it. I'm saying don't rush it and don't do it when you're not ready. But it's Prabhupada said the real connection is in the heart, and the real connection is made from hearing. And he said the diksha is just a formality. He said that. Because it's not the real thing. So the point is, what I'm talking about now is people made it the real thing. Like the goal was to get diksha. No, I got it. No. It's like, okay, the goal is to get married. So the day after you get married, you go, well, I got married. You know, my parents wanted me to get married. But you got married, and then you leave the next day. You say, where are you going? So I'm going to Vrindavan to retire, to do my bhakti. I just got married to please my parents. You know, it would be like that, you know. Okay, I got initiation, now I'm off. So it's not about that. So the connection, and then the other thing that's important, your connection with your guru is simultaneously your connection with Prabhupada. It's not that he's distinct. So it's not that you lose Prabhupada now that you have your guru. You actually get more of Prabhupada. And your guru is helping you get closer to Prabhupada. So it's not like he's in the way or he's on the side. No, he's a transparent via media. He's your glasses. So now you can see Prabhupada more clearly. So you have to see it simultaneously. And then that makes sense of the unity of all gurus, because you don't see anyone who's representing Prabhupada, you see like your guru. You'll see the same thing. So then that's the unity within our movement, you know. So your guru may be this one, this one. Doesn't mean you wouldn't want to hear from me, doesn't mean I wouldn't want to hear from them, doesn't mean they wouldn't want to hear from me. There's a oneness there. So Prabhupada said the guru is one, and the oneness is that the guru is representing Krishna. So, you know, I'm teaching mathematics, and Eka's teaching mathematics. You can learn from me, you can learn from her. It's the same mathematics. You might like my style because I tell jokes. You might like her style because she's really serious. But you're getting the same information. So, but I trust her style better, so I'll, you know. I like hearing from her. Okay, that's fine. So it's something like that. There's a unity there. And so that way we can trust many people. If I think it's bad if you just say, this is the only person I trust. Here's my guru. He's the only one I don't trust anybody else. Then if somebody says that, that's unhealthy. You know? Well, it's like, I trust this person implicitly. That's fine. But it doesn't mean because I trust him, I distrust everybody else. That wouldn't be right. You know? Then it's like, okay, you know, that's unhealthy. That's just, you know, it's like, I don't accept any authority. You know, that's the hippies. Don't trust authority. You know, it's like, you know, or your father is a horrible father. So you grow up and I don't listen to anybody. You know, I have issues with, when people say I have issues with authority, it's usually because they had bad experience. But obviously authorities aren't bad. It's just you had bad experience. So, okay, this person you trust. Okay, other people, you had bad experience. All right, but, you know, learn that more your issue than it is theirs, and start to see that if someone's representing Prabhupada or representing your guru, then Krishna, your guru is there also in that form. There's a universality of gurus. The guru is one on a transcendental position, and so we're all God brothers and God sisters in the family, although we have many other gurus. And so one of the problems that developed in ISKCON is you have this idea, you're my God brother, you're my God sister. Well, what about the God brother and God sister, the other girl? Do you see them as God brother and God sister? Well, they are, because we're Prabhupada. But we don't normally say that. We say, she's my God sister. But they're all your God sisters. So we want to broaden that view. You know, we're all sons of Prabhupada, so that means we're all related. We should get to their questions. Is it the formalities of the guru-disciple relationship that can create the lack of natural relationship with guru? Do we just understand it as wrong, like an unnatural reverence that impedes the natural relationship? Yes and no. And I think that just has to be balanced, because if it's too much of the etiquette part without the real relationship, then it's not going to work. So it's a balance, because etiquette has to be there. It's not that it's, well, after, you know, now everyone's going up to the guru, patting him on the back, you know, hey, Maharaj, what's up? Well, that's what Mahatma said to do. He said it should be real, you know? Well, I don't know how real that is, you know. The guru is your best friend, but is reverential, you know, like Prabhupada said, Arjuna, when he surrendered to Krishna, then Prabhupada said the friendly talk stopped, because they were friends. Now it's like serious stuff. But still, he's your best friend, but so, you know, it works on both levels. He's your best friend, but now we're talking serious here. So it's just to understand the reality of the relationship. That's the point. You know, understand it beyond the etiquette. It has to go beyond that. And, you know, it's like we had a workshop on humility, and I said, and someone said, I'm very humble at work, because if I'm not, I'll get fired. But that doesn't mean I'm humble. It's just I look humble. So I said, you know, I think I was asking the question, when do you manifest humility and it's not real? And he said, well, at work with my boss. You know, if I didn't have to be humble with him, I wouldn't, but I have to. It's part of my job. So, it's not real. It just, you know, so you don't want to do that, you know. Well, I have to be respectful. Of course, I'm not saying don't be respectful if you don't feel like it. That would be stupid. But I'm saying, if you're going to have a committed relationship with someone as your spiritual master, then it shouldn't be, it should be genuine. You should be doing it because, not that you have to, because he's your guru, because you want to. And then if you do all the etiquette, then it's just natural. It's naturally you'd want to do it. It's normal. But just the etiquette without that, Hari Bol Guru Dev, and then, you know, you're off, you know. Or you become too dependent on him, because because you haven't, the relationship isn't deep enough. You know, like if you don't have a really good relationship, a husband and wife don't have a good relationship, then the husband goes traveling, you know, he's in the military, he's gone, he comes back, his wife's some other guy. She couldn't, like, make it for a few months on her own. Because the relationship wasn't there. You know, so like guru goes and you fall into Maya. Something like that. But, well, what about all those instructions I gave? Well, when you're in, I'm in your presence, I'm fine, but when you leave, I fall apart. It's not supposed to, and it's not real. You know? In the presence, you get the inspiration to follow the instructions. You deepen the relationship. So when he's not there, you follow. Right? Isn't that the way it's supposed to be? Mm-hmm.
From my experience, I felt that in the absence of the teacher, the energy level or the way the mind sees things changes completely. So I'm not able to maintain it on that same level the way I am.
So I've been saying, in the presence, the inspiration was greater. Yeah, so then you have to access the presence. You have to learn how to access the presence and separation and through the instruction and learn that the real presence. The Prabhupada said the real presence is the instruction. It's like now, you can read Prabhupada's books. You're actually associating with him as much as anybody who was physically present, because the real thing is the instruction. So we have to learn to do that. It's harder when the person's physically present, because in their physical presence you're inspired. But if we always at least theoretically understand the real association is through service and instruction, and apply it, you'll feel the connection. That's what we have to learn. And you know, we're all different. So I may be more inspired by personal presence. Someone else may feel closer. It's just their nature. They feel close, you know. They're always in the back. You know, the guru comes and they run to the back. They cover their head. They don't even want him to see who they are. They just feel so close by being so far away. And somebody else is like running to the front. I always ran to the back, and I had godbrothers always trying to run with power, but I never felt a need to do that myself. But that's me. That's my nature. And the others, they had the nature being dependent like that, or not dependent. They should just wanting that to be very close. And then one devotee said that if he didn't get letters from Prabhupada every week, he couldn't do anything. He would just stop. He'd lose his enthusiasm. That was a more immature stage. And as you mature, then those instructions, whatever those instructions are, they become your activating principle. That activates your life, you know. This is why I do this, as my guru said. You know, like I chant 16 rounds every day. I don't want to do it every day. Why do I do it? Because Prabhupada told me and I promised. So the instruction becomes... So my 60 rounds is a connection because I made the promise. So when I'm chanting, I'm connecting with Prabhupada because it's an instruction he gave me. And I'm doing it every day also because that instruction is my... I feel that instruction as my link. So it's just a matter of learning how to do that. I mean, you know, when you're personally present, you don't have to learn. It's there. But it may also some people, what I found is some people, they're more self-reliant. Like, they can just read a book, understand it, and they just, you know, they go out and conquer the world. Other people need to be pushed more. You know, they always have to have somebody telling them, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it. So we have different natures. So if your nature is to be pushed more naturally, you'll feel more inspiration, more dependency on the presence. So then you just have to work on that so that you can be equally inspired by the instruction. Otherwise, I call it the balloon with the little hole in it, you know. So you're in the guru and he blows you up, you know, because you got this little hole. So you're a few days later, I'm really down. You know, I was really excited, and now I'm really down. You know, there's a hole in your balloon. You know? So if there's not, so he blows you up. If there's no hole, the balloon's going to stay, and he's gone. And the, you know, so that may be just dealing with our own nature. That, you know, I'm not such a self-reliant person. Like I know devotees, Prabhupada would come to the temple. They just prefer to serve than be around and listening to him. They just felt closer serving. So I don't think it's wrong to be inspired. It's natural to be inspired in the presence of Guru. It just becomes a problem when you're not inspired after they're gone. So when you, after they're gone, then you're left with all these jewels in the form of instructions and memories. And then you take those, then you can continue the connection and association in their absence. And someday you'll realize that that connection is actually closer and more real. Because that's the, as I was saying before, that's the essence of the disciple-guru-disciple relationship is the instruction. So if you're following the instruction, like, let's say your father dies. And, you know, in his last days he's saying, do this, don't do this, don't do this, do this. So if you do and don't do what he told you to do and not do, you'll feel connected with him. And if you don't do that, you'll feel disconnected. Right? You know, my father always asked me, you know, maintain the house, maintain the estate, maintain these investments. And you did it dutifully. You'll naturally feel connected, right? Yes? That's, so it's the same with Prabhupada. He established certain things he wanted us to do. We maintain them. We feel connected. You know, like sometimes when I'm traveling, it's really austere because you have to sleep overnight and then you get there the next day and they expect you to, like, do everything. And then if this goes on for a few months, it can get really hard, you know. And so on my last trip in the summer, I was asking myself, I said, you know, why are you doing this? Because this is like, you're really pushing yourself sometimes. And the only answer I could get is Prabhupada. You know, because I think, okay, if it wasn't Prabhupada, would you do a lot of the things you do now? I said, no, I wouldn't. I would, you know, but it's service to him. So then in all that traveling and whatever I'm doing, I feel that he's there, I'm connected. Like, he gave me these instructions, he gave me this knowledge, it's my duty to share it. If I don't share it, I disconnect from him, because that's what he wants me to do. So when I'm sharing it, I'm connected. So we don't see Prabhupada here, but he's here through the connection I make through service, or the connection you make through service. It takes time to realize this, and it's difficult, even for advanced devotees. But if you look at it just from a detached theoretical perspective, it makes sense. The real thing, the real gift the Guru gives you is the instruction, and that instruction could stay with you for life. You know, like let's say you're having a problem, and I give you instruction and it solves the problem. And all you have to do is follow that instruction all your life, then you realize that that's what I got from Mahatma is the most valuable thing I have, and that's, I follow that every day, and I feel I remember him every day because this is what he told me to do. And I feel close to him because I do that. Or close to whoever it is that gave you that instruction. I have this thing, I don't know if this is right or wrong. I hope it's right. I feel very close to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and I can't explain it so much. Like in Mayapur, I go to his rooms and I bring devotees and we clean his rooms. We clean everything. Clean the wall. You know what it's like in India. You know, they clean the floors. They don't clean anything else. So the bed's dusty, the frames are dusty, you know, and the higher up you go, the more dust there is. Because, you know, everybody's sweeping, right? Right? Cleaning and sweeping, and all the dust is going onto the fans and the frames. Anything on a flat surface, the dust lands on it. So we go in there and we bring devotees and it's a room. That's where he lived. That's where he wrote, where he chanted. And I do japa workshops, and he's been a real inspiration for me reading his books, and I feel really connected. I never met him, and I feel like if I saw him, I could just be like buddies almost. You know, not like that, but you understand. Like, I feel like I can relate to you. So another devotee felt that way, and he told Prabhupada, he made a little lie to Prabhupada. He said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is my second favorite author. And Prabhupada, he knows how people think. He said, oh, your second favorite? And he said, actually, you know, he said, actually he's my favorite. Prabhupada said, he said, if I could be just like a tenth of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I would be consider my life a success. So he was glorifying Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But I don't think I'm like special, but somehow or other, connecting with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and because through my chanting and teaching about chanting, and he taught about chanting, and the way he writes, and you know, so it's like you could be initiated and there could be another guru, and you just like you feel so connected because of the relationship and how they present Krishna consciousness, and you can't explain it. Then there's nothing wrong with it. Not only is there nothing wrong with it, there's everything right with it. So that shows, and you know, you feel deeply connected with this other person. He's not even your initiating guru, and he doesn't even live near you. So do you have to explain that? It's just, that's how it is. So if that's how it is, great. Why? What's wrong with it? It's good, isn't it? Is it bad that I'm connected to, I feel this connection, Bhaktivinoda Thakur? It's not bad, it's good. It's the murti of him in the samadhi, and I love to chant to that murti, and I see a picture, I just feel, I don't know, maybe I had some connection, and some, I don't know, I can't explain it. I mean, that would be kind of presumptuous, that I have some connection, but I feel like, you know, maybe we were connected or something, I don't know. Okay, we're going to have to end here because we're going to go to the temple. How long is it going to take to get to the temple? 15 minutes. 15? Okay, see if we can answer the questions quickly. Makes so much sense to take more shelter in association with our guru when we are struggling. Yes. I have a weird question. I apologize in advance. What if one experiences in the relationship with the guru that the latter gives him a disturbing, unpractical, impossible instruction, or when the instructions simply do not make any sense and beyond one's expectation, or that a guru seems unqualified for actually solving the situation, or having trouble understanding the disciple, or that the disciple feels that the guru teaches him in an offensive way, or that the disciple has strange doubts about a guru, which he doesn't really understand if this is normal? I don't think you should have a guru if this is how you see it. Because obviously, that's not what's happening. That's how you're seeing it. And if you're on that level to see that way, then if you get too close to a guru, you'll start making offenses. You know, because what he said may be perfect, and it was the perfect thing for you, and you misunderstood it. So I think your question is really good, because if you have these doubts, we were saying before, it's all about trust. If you have these doubts, then, I mean, if you said one of these things, I could give you an answer, but you said too many things, which was reflecting on you. If you said, okay, what, if experience the relationship with the guru, the latter gives him a disturbing, impractical, impossible instruction. Okay, we could talk about that. And so what would you do? You say, Gurudev, I don't know how to execute. Can you show me how to execute this? Because it seems impractical. Okay, that's all right, simple. But the fact that you listed like six things means it's more coming from you. So you have to learn how to trust. You have to learn how to better understand. Or maybe you're not ready for a guru. Maybe you're not ready to be. I mean, that's fine if you're not ready. And you take what you can. Take the instructions that you can accept, and the ones you can't accept, then don't worry about it. Because until you make a real commitment to a relationship, then you don't have to follow everything. Because there's no reason to. Because you don't have that relationship. So, okay, then find a guru who doesn't give you impractical instructions, who gives you instructions that make sense, who understands you, that doesn't offend you, that you don't have doubts about. Yeah, that's the other answer. Also, what one should do to develop greater trust and understand. Okay, this is a really good point. And all we need is another 2 hours and I can answer this. But the brief answer is, sometimes when there's a lack of trust, it could be because the person's not trustworthy. Or it could be that you have trust issues, and you have to distinguish. You know, is this person trustworthy, and it's just I don't trust people, or is this person not trustworthy? So, the question you're asking here, it seems like you're asking how to develop greater trust, and you're realizing that you have an issue with trust, and your issues with trust are usually related to bad experiences in the past, and you have to always understand that. It's like, you know, they make laws because people are doing something and then all the innocent people get punished? You know those kinds of laws. You know, why they make this law, you know, that if you know, you if you bump into a woman in the business, in a business environment, then you know you're considered to be aggressively assaulting. No, I just bumped into her by accident. No, no. This, you know, you're going to be sanctioned, you're going to be fired, you know. Why do they do that? Because of this other guy who was aggressive with women, everyone in the company is getting punished. And now if you talk to a woman for more than 30 seconds, if you smile, you know, now there's suspicion. Whereas, you know, last week, everything was fine. So when we lose trust in one, we tend to lose trust in others, and that becomes a problem for us. So we have to recognize that. Why not accept a relationship which is good because you had a relationship which was bad? So you have to work through that, because now you're hurting your own self. And there's nothing wrong with this person. There's something wrong with that person. And now you think this guy is like this guy, but he's not. And if he's not, then just admit it. Right? If he's not like this other guy, he's not. So why make believe he is and get all mental about it? Then that's something you have to work through. It may not be easy, but at least if you recognize it, then you can work through it. So the point is that these questions are coming in. The point is sometimes the person, the guru, everything's fine, this disciple's not fine. And so he's not ready to be a disciple. So that's good. So when you're ready, you'll be ready. And the relationship won't develop if you're not ready, because you'll see all these other things. So then if that's how you are, that's fine. Just don't worry about it. I mean, worry about it, do something, but don't worry that the relationship isn't there. You know, like some people that I know never married, and they want to marry, but they never found anybody to marry. So okay, you're 65 years old and you never found anybody to marry. What do you think about that person? I got pretty high standards, pretty high expectations. Yeah, I mean, there must be somebody good enough in the universe for you. No, I haven't found him yet. So obviously it's not that there's nobody good, that this person has some, whatever problem they have, I don't know, something. You know? So you have to understand that, you know. If it's about you or it's about the guru, you know. If the guru is good and you're seeing it, then it's more your own issue. And then you work on that. So there must be some man good enough for maybe, possibly, there's something wrong with me. Maybe my expectations can't be met. They're not realistic like that. Yeah, naturally think like that. What Dustin said reminds me an example you gave in an interview in Mayapur when you were talking about a hippie in San Francisco who met Prabhupada the first time. Without knowing anything, bowed down. He naturally bowed down. Prabhupada said, "That is love." It was just spontaneous. He saw Prabhupada, and then he was overwhelmed. He just surrendered on the spot. I mean, that happens. Yeah, probably they were, you know, from another life. Yeah. Another question, maybe off topic. When acting in a role of six-year guru for another disciple who is more or less equal, yet started deviating and the former is trying to save him, bring back enthusiasm and resolve issues, how should one do it in order to not cause a negative reaction such as creating more offenses and deviate even further, especially when the latter from beginning is being somewhat distanced? Unless I know the exact situation, I have to know the person. I can't give a general answer because everybody's different. Some people, you just take a hammer and hit them in the head, and that's all they understand, is a hit in the head. I'm serious. It's not my style, but some people don't understand anything than a hit in the head. And other people, if you hit them in the head, you'll devastate them. They'll give up spiritual life. So everybody's different. Some people need force, some people need love, some people need understanding, some people need time, some people need friendship, some people need good advice, some people need to be left alone. So you have to judge by the individual. And so, dear friends, it's time to end.